Previously on Four at the Back.
So maybe it's not the economy, because Galaxy fans think there are plenty of AC Milan loving suckers out there who are going to watch millionaires play against their will. And I can see the appeal. I can see slavery making a comeback in MLS. Major League slavery.
That's, you just gave us our previously on Four at the Back for next week, Dan. Thanks.
And welcome to the game of the year, the one we've all been waiting for. There's a capacity crowd here. The conditions are absolutely perfect, with an atmosphere that's really electric. Now, the band's just leaving the pitch, and we're waiting for it. Yes, I think I can see them. Yes, it's the team. Here they come. Just listen to that roar.
You are listening to Four at the Back with Dan and Ken.
Yep, it's Four at the Back with Dan and Ken, episode number 5. I'm Ken Tomash. The other voice you will hear is Dan Loney. And every week we take 4 topics from the world of American soccer and have a go at them. On this week's show, we'll talk about the United Soccer Leagues. Their pro division seasons are underway. Bob Leonarduzzi, president of the Vancouver Whitecaps, is our special guest this week. We'll also talk about the Seattle Sounders and whether they're coming back to earth. And has Bruce Arena jumped the shark? That's all ahead on this week's Four at the Back.
Topic 1.
Okay, Dan, the USL first and second division seasons are underway. The second division has only played a few games. They'll get all 9 of their teams into action this weekend. But let's look at the first division, which has 2 new teams. They lost 2 teams in Seattle and Atlanta, and they almost lost another one in Miami. They stand to lose Vancouver and Portland in the next couple years, maybe Montreal after that, while they get Tampa Bay and, we presume, New York. What do you think of where this league is right now?
They are what they are. They're the Pacific Coast League of the 50s. And Major League Baseball is expanding, and what they thought were their loyal fans are jumping over to watch the big boys. I realize there's not that big a gap, but there's certainly more of a gap than USL partisans will admit. And the other thing, the real raging rhino in the room is how quickly former USL diehards in Seattle turn to MLS diehards. That's going to happen in Portland. That's going to happen in Vancouver. There were no USL diehards in Toronto. Every market that MLS takes over is just lost. All the work that's been done, just you're growing flowers for another girl, basically.
Well, they do have the new team this year in Austin. They drew 5,000 for their opener, and then a tough one a few days later at home. They draw 1,500, but we'll wait and see how that plays out. Austin, it may be a decent kind of market for them to be in as we go forward, because they're not going to be in the big places that they're used to being in for the last few years.
And that's the future of the USL. Austin in particular, I think they're over the whole Austin posse thing, where they signed a bunch of legitimate borderline MLS players a few years ago, invited Tigres up, and just talked a much bigger game. They folded after a couple of exhibition games. So one thing USL does, it actually does grow the market. It's nowhere near as ridiculously unstable as the A-League was toward the end, where he had some real fly-by-night characters in San Diego, for example.
Believe me, I know. I saw most of those people up close and personal. Cleveland moves up from D2 to D1 this year. Partially, they needed them to, partially because they had lost Atlanta and lost Seattle. They're playing at a high school stadium in the suburbs. They were the D2 champions and organization of the year. They've got a good D2 organization. It might almost be a bigger jump from USL 2 to USL 1 than it is from USL 1 to MLS.
Yeah, have fun with that road trip to Puerto Rico and Vancouver, with the budget and the economy is now just, it comes with a laugh track. And at least they're not paying players MLS salaries, but doesn't mean the airlines are going to give you a break. And you're absolutely right. It's a single table, so you don't have even the divisional crutch that the PDL has. So that's a very good point. I mean, you're asking these I hate to use minor league as a pejorative, because that's not fair, but it's accurate. Not fair, but accurate. I'm looking at Rochester and their recent history, and that's just tragic. 10 years ago, they were the we must be an MLS team, MLS can't do without us. They were Montreal of the 1990s. And I'm surprised they're still fielding a team at this point.
Well, they almost weren't until they found an owner 2 seasons ago. So they are trying to come back. So I give them credit for that. Let's talk about Miami now. Now, after almost folding, going down to the wire, instead of being at some small little park in Miami now, they're playing some games at Lockhart Stadium and at Florida International, which is going to be way too big for them. They've signed Diego Serna and Facundo Urpin, guys like that. I don't think it makes a difference. And I don't necessarily think, like everybody else does, oh, Florida is a bad market, Miami is a bad market. I think the teams that Miami has had have failed the market more than the market has failed the teams.
I think the marketing has failed the market, but I don't know if a USL Miami team is ever going to be much more impressive than the Toronto USL team was, which if you remember the Lynx, and nobody does, they would dream of fielding like 1,000 people in the stands. I don't think whatever Miami is, it is not a minor league market any more than New York or Los Angeles is. They just will not support lower division teams.
Tim Holt, the vice president of USL, is going to be our guest next week to talk about recent changes and the future of that league or those leagues. Puerto Rico and Vancouver were last year's finalists in USL 1. The Whitecaps are winless as of tonight at 0-1-2. Puerto Rico's 1-0. And speaking of Vancouver, that leads us to Topic 2.
Topic 2.
Vancouver Whitecaps FC is the oldest team currently in USL 1, going way back to 1986 in the CSL, but they're going to be heading out to Major League Soccer in 2011. MLS's first Canadian team in Toronto has been a big success, and Vancouver's Pac Northwest rival Seattle's off to a great start in their expansion season. So I asked Whitecaps VP Bob Leonarduzzi about the response they've been getting in the month since their MLS announcement.
It's been beyond my expectations, and I was optimistic that we would get a very positive response to securing a Major League Soccer franchise, but I don't think I anticipated that we'd see the kind of response, and really where you're looking for a response, it's all well and good to have people telling you that they're excited about you joining Major League Soccer, but what you need them to do is you need them to put their money where their mouths are, and we had an initial window of 5,000 season ticket deposits that we established 3 days after making the announcement, and within 48 hours those 5,000 were gone, and that would to me indicated that we're certainly going in the right direction. In addition to that, we actually have 2,500 current season ticket holders to our USL Whitecaps team, and all of those people will be at the front of the queue when it comes to allocating seats in the new BC Place. You know, we're well on the way, and that interest level is still there. We have a waiting list that we've established, and that waiting list is currently approaching 1,000 people. And what we found with those kinds of lists that normally relates to 2 or 3 tickets per person on the list. So, you know, we've got anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 there that are already chomping at the bit to take advantage of our next window of season ticket sales deposits.
Was there ever really a question as to whether you'd keep the Whitecaps name?
The one thing that we have established as a result of differentiating between what we're currently doing in USL and what we will be doing for the next 2 years and 2011 is we were generic in our branding at our press conference and all of the other information that's gone out, and it's VancouverMLS2011.com. And the rationale behind that is that obviously there are two different things. We're going from the equivalent that I use is minor league baseball to the major leagues. And we needed to make that differentiation for the general public. And then as far as the name goes, I would be absolutely devastated if it were anything other than Whitecaps. But at the same time, we've got a couple of years to ensure that what I'm feeling and what the vast majority of people are feeling is that we should retain the name. So, and certainly we're hearing that loud and clear. But we're going to take the 2 years just to be 100% sure that that's the direction that people want us to go in.
Obviously, the Caps have been very successful at the USL level. Before that is the 86ers. You're the defending league champs. Why did you guys want to make this move up to MLS, and why now and not, say, 4 or 5 years ago?
That's an easy answer. Greg Kerfoot. He is one of our current four owners, but he's the catalyst behind the revival of soccer in this province. When he took over in 2002, he obviously had plans that were beyond my wildest dreams. But he's been very pragmatic about it, and we've built up our club along the way. We have a youth development system that we're very, very excited about, that's already starting to pay dividends. So we've established that along the way, and really, I think what we were trying to do is make sure that we did a good job with our own club before we looked at taking the next step. And obviously, Major League Soccer have also been very systematic about expansion, and this current addition of two teams was the first opportunity, since we felt we were ready, that we could make the move.
You mentioned BC Place. How do you expect that will play as a soccer venue after all the renovations are made?
Stunning. The only issue that I could have, and I'm being picky here, is the fact that it won't be natural grass, and it won't be natural grass because there's a lot of other events that will be taking place in the building. But certainly from every other perspective, the province have gone out of their way to make sure that they have addressed our needs. And our needs, we said to them, look, in its current state, we would never entertain playing in there, and we probably would forego an MLS franchise rather than go into that building in its current state. It's a tired old building, and you know, we were the first sporting event in BC Place in 1983, and we had 60,000 people out at the game. But to go in there now with even 20,000 people, it would be a very cavernous building and not a great atmosphere. So what they've incorporated as part of their $365 million renovation is suiting the building to our needs. And our needs are, we want the seats up nice and close to the field of play. We don't need end zones, so we'll have seats in behind the goal that are right up tight to the net. And the best feature is there will be a roof within a roof. So if you look up from seating yourself in the lower bowl, you won't see anything other than the false roof. And then you'll see above that either the blue skies, or you'll see the building of the roof, because it is a retractable roof. So I'm excited about the prospects of BC Place, and I'm also excited about the fact that it's downtown, and it'll be an entertainment hub. And it's been proven that stadiums in the downtown core of cities have a far better chance of success than those that are out in the outskirts.
That's Bob Leonarduzzi, Vice President of Vancouver Whitecaps FC. More from him, as well as extended interviews with all of our guests in the coming weeks on Forward the Back Extra. Watch for details on that. Dan, do you welcome our Canadian overlords?
Yes, I do. But I would welcome any team that has an owner and wants to support a team. One of the interesting things is how effusive Leonarduzzi was about their owner, how BC Place has been completely embraced, with the exception of the field turf, but that's up to the owner. They could put a team in Cedar Rapids, wherever you want. I don't think Canada is bad or good for MLS. It's just the individual franchises. And while we have a drain like Chivas USA in the league, I don't think we're in a position to tell an actual market like Vancouver that they're not good enough for our party.
Well, I expect Vancouver to be successful, and I'm with you in that successful clubs are what's going to make this league, whether they're on the north side of the border or the south side. I would hope that Vancouver would still get that waterfront stadium. It looked great. I'm not completely sold on BC Place yet, but I'm going to reserve judgment on that until I see what the renovations really look like. I just can't see the province and the provincial government spending $365 million on renovations and then letting the Whitecaps just walk and build their own stadium, and then they're sitting there with BC Place.
Pretty much that's it. One of the things we're finding is that on both sides of the border, public money is very difficult to come by. I think this bid is just a sign that they are going to accept the black cover. It couldn't be more black, and they like the old cover, but it was a little too sexy.
All right, two topics down, two to go. Stick around. This is for the back. I got it. I know it. I know it. I got it. I'm hip.
It's like, how much more black could this be? And the answer is none.
More than half of all Canadians will know someone or will need blood themselves at some point in their lives. The generosity of a blood donor like you can make a difference. This month, the Barbershop Harmony Society, in partnership with Canadian Blood Services and AMA Quebec, will be hosting Singing for Life blood donor recruitment events across Canada. You can help save a life, so don't delay. Join with the Barbershop Harmony Society this month and give the gift of life. For more information, contact your local blood clinic.
You are listening to Four at the Back with Dan and Ken.
Halfway through episode 5 of Four at the Back. If you haven't already subscribed at iTunes, please do. If you have, thank you very much. If you download us from either Ken.com or Dan's blog on BigSoccer.com, thank you. Please tell a friend.
Topic 3.
We'll stay in the Pacific Northwest for now. Seattle Sounders FC, they're still doing great at the gate, obviously. But since that 3-0 start, they've lost two straight, both by shutout, including a top-of-the-table match at Chivas USA last week. Dan, are the Sounders coming back to earth?
Well, if you play without your starting goalkeeper and give up own goals, yeah, you're not going to look as good. I think people were too enthusiastic about Seattle when they went 3-0. And now I think they're starting to break their ankles jumping off the bandwagon. I think you can say this throughout MLS, but it's going to be at least another month before we really get a feel of how these teams are going to do, with the exception of the Galaxy. I think the book on Seattle is pretty much, it's a Ziggy Schmidt team. It's very disciplined. They're hopefully not going to make too many more own goal mistakes like James Rowley made. They're not very deep, so when they miss a player, they're going to be pretty vulnerable, but that's because they're an expansion team. They're going to get a lot of help from the home field, and they're going to make, because they're in the West, they're going to make a serious playoff run. I don't know if they make it or not, but they're not going to lose their next 20 games by any stretch of the imagination. They're fine. They really are.
You mentioned them being in the West, and obviously they are, and rightly so.
Yeah, Lewis, that was like, blame Lewis and Clark.
Right. But if they were in the East, they would have been tied with Chicago for the lead before Kansas City beat New York tonight. So they'd be a point out of first place in the East. They're 4 points out in the West. Not everybody has played the same number of games, yada, yada, all that. So for now they've got a big one this week. I think it's a fairly big game for both teams against San Jose at home.
Yeah, San Jose had to be just very disappointed not to defeat Los Angeles. I think I've talked about San Jose playing in Oakland. They have to stop that. And as far as, every MLS game is hard to pick, but I don't really see San Jose. I think they're still an expansion team. I think Ziggy's just a flat-out better coach than Frank Yallop. And I think Ziggy knows enough to stand on Huckerbee. And I don't think San Jose's got a lot of weapons besides him. And Keller's back. It just seems like Seattle is going in as a solid favorite, which is embarrassing when you're talking about an expansion team. But it isn't like San Jose's been around for 100 years, so.
Topic 4.
And finally this week, he won MLS's first two championships, took the U.S. to two World Cups, but since returning to the club level, Bruce Arena's record is just 18 wins, 22 losses, and 16 draws. I know the Galaxy's a bad team, Dan, Muppet Newsflash, but he got to retool them in the offseason, and they're 0-1-3. Is the bloom off of the Arena Rose, do you think?
They're only four games below five. It seems like they should be 40 games below.
Well, they stole a point. They stole that one point against DC, remember?
And they stole the point against San Jose. And let me stick up for Bruce Arena in that he's got a lot of good young players. He had them in New York, and he has more than his share going for him right now in Los Angeles. We saw Brian Jordan. He doesn't have necessarily the physical tools. He's all heart. Omar Gonzalez certainly has the physical tools. He's doing something with Sean Franklin that I agree, actually, and I'm in the minority. Turning this sweeper into a winger takes advantage of a lot of his youth and skill. It's going to make him a better player. The problem is he brought in veteran/teachers that he feels comfortable with that just can't play anymore. I think he sees Preki and thinks everyone can play till they're 40. And he learned nothing from Claudio Reyna. And now we have, we being the whole human race, now we get to watch people like Santa and Berhalter. And Berhalter looked great in comparison with Santa. Eddie Lewis is not the player he once was. Jovan Karofsky was never the player he once was. Mike McGee is just not going to live up to the potential. I think we need to face that now. Stefani Milioranzi is a journeyman who should not be your midfield hope. Dima Kovalenko, and I've never liked him as a player, I admit that, but I think just as far as the talent, I don't think he has the skills he had when he came in with Chicago. I think the people he brought in to nurse the youngsters are not doing it, just like they didn't last year under Hullet. And that's why you're going to see a lot of mistakes, a lot of growing pains, and this is where you don't blame the coach, you blame the organization, because AEG will not tolerate rebuilding. Just will not.
So how patient do you think AEG is going to be? Obviously, I mean, I think that Red Bull pulled the trigger too early.
I agree.
How patient is AEG with their flagship franchise? They've got half of Houston, but LA is basically their baby.
They are as patient as a second grader high on pixie sticks. I'm trying to pick out the actual day that Arena gets fired. I was thinking around my birthday, August. It may be before that. If they fall, they've only lost once, but if they're something like 1-6-3 or something like that, and there's no reason they can't be, I think AEG eats yet another big coaching contract and hopefully starts again with someone in it for the long haul. And anyway, I think Bruce Arena might be happier either taking over for Sen in D.C. if he can't get United turned around, or just taking the reins at Philadelphia, where they will give him enough of a chance to actually build a team. I think next year will be the final test for Arena. I think this year is just a write-off for everyone concerned.
Wow, and that's coming from a Galaxy fan, folks.
I like our rookies. I just hope he doesn't ruin them.
Well, you know, and this is something that I've said before, but if you look back on it, it's very strange. If Park Ji-sung doesn't score for South Korea against Portugal to put the U.S. through the second round in 2002, Arena today might be the Big East Coach of the Year or something like that. I've been a defender of his for a while with the national team. Some would have said an apologist. But judging on his results up until, say, the summer of 2006, I thought he deserved the benefit of the doubt, because there's no question, you know, that he took the national team from a place where it was to a place where it needed to be, and then it was time to get off. I just don't know what's happened to him at the club level, or if it's just a conspiracy of unfortunate coincidences.
He's picked bad owners. Marc de Grandpre was not the person you want to work for. I don't think, and again, he may turn the Galaxy completely around, but keep in mind, Hullet got them off to a good start. Right now, Ruud Hullet looks like a better coach than Bruce Arena. But that's because of the Galaxy. It's such a bad situation. I think Bruce just has lousy/egotistical taste in teams he thinks he can rebuild, and he really needs the clean slate, something like Ziggy chose in Seattle.
Right. Well, and Juan Carlos Osorio somehow got New York into the final last year. They are now 1-3-2 in the early going. So it's not like, it's not like they've been pushing up daisies. Actually, they have been pushing up daisies. It's not like they've been pushing up roses with Osorio since they kicked Arena to the curb.
Oh, New York is probably the most schizophrenic team in the league. You do not know what will show up week in and week out with those guys. I can't figure out Osorio. I certainly can't figure out his foreign players. But when they get their good young players hooking up with Angel, and most of those guys you can credit Arena for bringing in, then the Red Bulls are indeed a very good team. But otherwise, they look like opening day in Seattle.
Okay, now some housekeeping. Again, we've got 51 subscribers on iTunes. Thank you very much. And our email this week comes from Paul in Indonesia, the very certain host of the 2018 World Cup. And Paul writes, I've been listening to your new podcast. It sounds like you and Dan have something good going there. Brisk, smart, funny, and occasionally mean-spirited. All essential parts of a good podcast. It might behoove Dan to lay off the laughing gas, though. That's just part of the charm of Dan Loney, though, isn't it?
I wasn't aware I had charm.
If you do, that's it. Paul continues, you guys strike a good balance between quality and quantity. Well, we're trying to at least keep the quantity down if the quality is not that great. Please keep up the good work, and here's to many more episodes. Thank you very much, Paul in Indonesia, long-time listener, first-time emailer.
Thank you. Do we have long-time listeners after only four? Thank you, Paul. That was very nice, and I promise to stop laughing.
All right, please send us your email.
What's the email address?
The email address is podcast@ken.com. That's podcast@ken.com. Send us your suggestions, your likes, your dislikes, your topics you'd like us to cover, anything. Send us an MP3 file. We'll even edit you into the show. So send them to us.
Whoa. Anything?
Well, within reason. I mean, it's not like serious exactly, but I think we could push the envelope a little bit.
I like my envelopes unpushed. Thank you very much. Right.
Send them to podcast@ken.com. Dan, do you have any final thoughts?
No.
Does he ever? He's Dan Loney. I'm Ken Tomash. This has been Four at the Back. Till next time, so long.
Well, there it is. A match that had everything, and one that certainly lived up to its promise. It's only a pity that somebody usually has to lose. But there's always another day, another great match to be drawn, lost, or won, when we'll join you again.